It's time for From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine with Trey Schaap. A golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around, trying to put it in a 4 1/4-inch diameter hole. From the Shortgrass is presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine and brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. And now, from the Shortgrass, here's your host, Trey Schaap.
Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you the 2026 Masters champion, Rory McIlroy.
I thought it was so difficult to win last year because of trying to win the Masters and the Grand Slam, and then this year I realized it's just really difficult to win the Masters. I tried to convince myself it was both, but just incredible. You know, I obviously did the bulk of my work on Thursday and Friday, and you know, I don't think I would have believed anyone if they said to me, you know, all you have to do is shoot even par for the weekend and you'll win. I definitely thought I was going to need to go out there and at least shoot a couple of under par scores. But, you know, the course in the afternoon, you know, yesterday the course was gettable pretty much all day. But today the wind was up a little bit. It was gusty. It made things definitely a little more tricky, especially on the back nine. And I just had to hang in there. You know, I did a decent range session last night and tried to figure a couple of things out. And I definitely hit my irons better today. I think I struck the ball better today overall, which was good to see. But I still needed to rely on my short game those last few holes. You know, the up and down on 16 and the up and down on 17 were huge.
Welcome to another edition of From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I am your host, Trey Schaap. That was Rory McIlroy. He wins the Masters for the second time in his career and did it in back-to-back fashion. He becomes just the fourth player to win back-to-back green jackets. He joins Jack Nicklaus, Nick Faldo, and Tiger Woods on that list. He shoots 12 under par for the 4 days at Augusta National, beating Scottie Scheffler, the world number one player, by one shot. Tyrell Hatton, Russell Henley, Justin Rose, and Cameron Young were two back. Colin Morikawa and Sam Burns finished tied for seventh at 9 under par. UAMS Ortho now open at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. If you have an orthopedic injury, sports, work, or anything else, go in and see the best in orthopedic care. You'll be glad you did. Coming up on this edition of From the Shortgrass, I travel to Athens, Georgia to sit down with Chris Hack, the head coach of the men's golf team at the University of Georgia, who is going to retire after 30 years. This is the first of a two-part episode with Coach Hack. Stay tuned.
I'm Dr. Lowry Barnes. When it comes to orthopedic care, there's no place like the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. We built this hospital just for you, with state-of-the-art surgical suites, advanced technology, and the state's largest group of fellowship-trained orthopedic surgeons. It's the best place in Arkansas to get you moving again. And if you need urgent orthopedic care, UAMS Ortho Now is right here for you at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health, where motion lives and service leads.
Strength is measured not by the number of accounts. Strength is placing value on relationships. It's having the vision and the guts to invest in growth. It's the commitment to responsibly manage your money. At Stevens, we believe that our strengths build success, not only for us, but for our clients. Stevens, member NYSE, SIPC.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I am Trey Schaap. Chris Hack was named the Georgia men's golf coach on July the 18th of 1996. And after this season, he is set to retire. He has coached the Bulldogs to 2 national championships, the only 2 in school history, 8 SEC crowns, 67 team tournament titles, and virtually every squad and individual records are under his watch. 11 of his players have 44 PGA Tour wins, and all of the money that they have won, they have earned more than $200 million at the pro level. This is the first part of a two-part episode with Coach Hack. Some stories about Tiger Woods, Bubba Watson, and so many more. On the tee, Chris Hack.
Coach Hack, thanks for joining me on this edition of From the Short Grass. Do you remember the first time you ever picked up a golf club and fell in love with this game?
Well, I remember when I kind of got interested in golf. I was 11. Went out and just kind of hit some balls at the country club and thought it was kind of fun. So kind of stuck with it.
Played golf in high school?
Played golf in high school and then played a little bit in college at West Georgia. But we were Division III, no scholarships. I found the fraternity to be a lot more fun than the golf team. So I kind of gave it up and enjoyed my fraternity time.
I think a lot of people found the fraternities a little more fun than other things like school, right?
Without a doubt, which is one of the reasons why when I came to Georgia, one of my first rules was you can't join a fraternity because I knew what avenue it took me down. I didn't want my guys going down that same road.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing that I guess you have to have set rules for your program.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Well, my feeling on it was, and having experienced it, was that, look, there are certain things that are really important. School, golf, social life, and your social life is not going to be the biggest determining factor. So one of the things I said to these guys early on, look, I was a fraternity guy, I get it, but let's do this. You can't join a fraternity your first year. But after 1 year, if you feel like you have so much time on your hands because of school and golf, come back to me and we'll talk about it. And I've never had anybody come and say to me, yeah, I've got so much time for fraternity now, let's go do it. Because, you know, golf wasn't going to be something that suffered and grades weren't going to be something that we're going to suffer. So,
and I'm pretty sure that if someone came to you and said, Coach, yeah, I've really got a lot of time, I think I can do it, your response would probably be, well, then you're not dedicating enough time to the game.
Well, yeah, you're probably not in the lineup for a reason.
Yeah. Chris, when did you know that you wanted to make golf part of your life and make a career out of it? You started with the AJGA, is that correct?
That's right. So when I was in college, Mike Bentley, who had started the Atlanta Junior Golf Association and started the American Junior Golf Association, well, I played in the Atlanta Junior Golf Association, and he had asked me, said, hey, do you want a summer job? You know, come help us run these tournaments in the Atlanta area. And I said, yeah. So I thought that was a great way to spend my summers, and I would do that and had a great time doing it. And then in 1981, the American Junior Golf Association was just kind of, you know, they did one tournament, in 1978, and then they did one tournament in 1979 along with the tournament champion. So they had a couple. Mike had thought, hey, this might be something I want to try to take nationally and do. And I remember him asking me, hey, would you be interested in us giving the Atlanta Junior Golf Association to somebody else, and let's really focus on really growing the AJGA at that point. And I thought, yeah, because I loved it. I thought the experience that I had with the American Junior Golf Association was phenomenal, because you literally felt like you were playing in a tour event for kids. And so I said, yeah, let's do it. So I joined him, and man, we just started adding tournaments here and there. And, you know, next thing you know, we had five events, and the next year we had seven events and so forth, and started growing. One of the events that we did was our end-of-the-year event at Innisbrook Resort. And the pro down there at the Copperhead course at the time was a guy named Stephen Hamblin. And Stephen was ultra-organized, did a great job. You know, I loved working hand-in-hand with him on our event. And so then in 1986, Mike decided he was going to step down and they were looking. Yeah, I was still young. Heck, I was only 26 years old. I was still pretty young. And they tapped Stephen to come and be the executive director, and I was his second-hand man. And then he and I continued to grow it from there, and really just, gosh, over those next 10 years, just saw it grow leaps and bounds, and had a ball doing that.
Are you surprised at how much it has grown and how prestigious it is now?
Well, to me, it's a little bit of a double-edged sword in that the growth of it is phenomenal. What I really loved about it was that we were doing, you know, at one time we were doing maybe 10 to 12 and then 16 events throughout the year. All the best players would come from around the country and come to those events. So you saw all the best players all the time. But we were growing so much and we were turning away so many players that wanted to play that, we were trying to figure things out. And then all of a sudden we decided, well, let's do multiple tournaments on a week and so forth. And I think what happened over time, a little bit of that diluted it a little bit. I'd noticed it more when I got into the coaching side of things because I still wanted to go to the big major events, but I didn't really care about going to a lot of the little more regional events. And so I think a little bit of it got diluted in that regards, but it has, without a doubt, offered so many opportunities, so many kids to get their names out in front of college coaches that it's done its job. I mean, it really exposed a lot of kids that might not have gotten that exposure.
I understand that you met a guy named Glenn Day when you were at the AJGA.
Yes. Had him for a summer where he and a couple of guys kind of would go around with us and help us as summer interns. And Glenn was quite a character, as you well know, and loved Glenn. He was a lot of fun and had a lot of great stories and memories with him that we probably can't share on air.
No, but I was going to say, there has to be one that you can share.
But, I will tell you this one. I do know that there was a tournament one time that we had, and we were trying to find one of his cohorts, you know, and we're asking him, you know, like, where, you know, what hole are you covering? And he was like, oh, I'm on the front side. Well, we come to find out he had gone back to his room and was taking a nap. Yeah, those are some fun times with those guys. And then, of course, I see, I don't know how many years later, you know, he's playing the tour and playing well and has a great, you know, had a great career out there.
Won at Harbortown?
Yeah, and not only won, but then I think is he still playing on the senior tour?
He's
still playing a little bit?
Some on the champions tour. He's had some surgeries.
Yeah.
But yeah, some hip issues.
But I did some great things in golf with his talent. So I was always glad to see that.
When did you know, Chris, that you wanted to leave the AJGA and become the head golf coach here at the University of Georgia?
So in 1990, the AJGA created a tournament called the Cannon Cup. And it was something that Steven and I had wanted to do. And it was basically we'd take the best 10 boys and girls from the West and we'd set up like a Ryder Cup type of event against the 10 best boys and girls from the East. He was going to captain the East. I was going to captain the West. And that first year, we're trying to figure out how, you know, we were going to let the staff kind of determine who the best players were. We didn't really have a ranking system of any sort. But we each got two captain's picks. I had been to a tournament at the Big Eye that year, and I'd seen this 13-year-old kid play. And at the time, we were 14 through 18, but he was going to turn 14 by the time the Cannon Cup was coming around. And I kind of went off the board, and I picked this kid. And everybody was like, who?
Who is it?
And I went, well, I think he's going to be pretty good. So a month later, our tournament is at Lake Nona, and we get down there, and the first thing I do when he gets there is I send his dad to the room, and I said, I need you to throw on a set of clubs on a cart. We're going to go play because I wanted to see if I had just made the biggest mistake in my life. So off we went. We played 9 holes, and I went, I'm going to be just fine. It was Tiger Woods.
Wow.
And so Tiger played for me on 4 teams, and that camaraderie of a team and being, you know, having team meetings and talking about strategies and, you know, just the whole experience I thought was really, really cool. And it was something that I looked forward to every year because then I did it for the next 6 years. And And so then when Dick Copas retired from the University of Georgia, there were a lot of guys that were my friends that had played at Georgia who called me and said, hey, would you ever have any interest in doing this? Because we think you'd be great. And that experience with the Cannon Cup made me go, yeah, I'd be interested. So I came up, talked to Vince Dooley about the job, and then had to kind of go through the committee. And I was very fortunate in that my search committee that he had picked was Jimmy Gabrielson. These were all former players. Jimmy Gabrielson, who had been a two-time Walker Cup player and captain. Mm-hmm. Danny Yates, who had been Walker Cup guy. Jimmy Blanchard, who had played here, was president of Synovus Bank. David Boyd, two-time All-American here, and was on the executive committee of the USGA. And a guy named Happy Dix, who was a football player but loved golf and was a great friend of Vince Dooley's. That was kind of the committee that got together and recommended me to Coach Dooley. And luckily, he didn't know anything about golf. He wasn't a golfer.
Right.
So he really leaned on those guys to give him who they thought was the best candidate. And fortunately, they thought it was me.
And the rest is history.
The rest is history. So to this day, since I've announced my retirement, you know, unfortunately, David Boyd has passed away, but I called Jimmy Gabrielson. I've called Jimmy Blanchard and these guys and Danny Yates and just thanked them for the last 30 years because if it wouldn't have been for them, this would have never happened.
We're going to get into the 30 years here at Georgia, but I have to go back to Tiger Woods and playing with him at that age of 13, just about to turn 14. What was that like?
Well, you know, there was just something different about him. I mean, he was just a skinny kid, you know. And I remember we were playing Lake Nona, and the ninth hole there, I hit a three wood, and I hit one of these great, you know, hooking three woods that ran forever, and I out hit his driver. And so to this day, every time I see him, I'll always say something like, that was probably, you know, what's the longest three wood you ever saw? You know, he's always like, oh, you know.
Ribs you about it?
But yeah, he ribs me a little bit about it. But anyway, he was a great kid, you know, and again, he had a great sense of humor. You know, he was a practical joker. He was one of those kind of guys who loved giving you the needle but could take the needle, you know. And I think, again, a lot of that was his dad always, you know, doing things to distract him and just make sure that his full concentration was where it was needed to be. But, I loved being around him. So years later, you know, he was at Augusta. I actually went and caddied in the par three contest for our very first AJJ player of the year, Willie Wood, who was a buddy of mine. And we'd gone up to the range. And this was back when the range was running down Magnolia Lane,
yeah.
And I noticed Tiger hitting balls. He was hitting these bullet drivers that were hitting into the net down there. And I kind of wandered down there, and I was talking to him. I said, why are you hitting all these bullet drives like that? And he goes, because if I tee it up too high, I hit it over the net, they get mad at me. I went, you can hit it over that net.
Hits it onto Washington Avenue.
Yeah, because I had played down there, and let me tell you, that net was a long way. and so I said, well, hit one over for me for old time's sakes. He goes, no, I can't. He said, really? They'll get mad at me. So we sat, we talked, we were talking for a while, and after, you know, a little while, I saw him tee one up a little higher, and he kind of walked back to me and he goes, this is for old time's sake. And, man, that thing probably flew into Piggly Wiggly over there. And he picked up his tee and said, I'm out of here.
Wow.
So again, I think Tiger's great. And, you know, just kind of unfortunate what's kind of happened to him here lately. And I'm hoping he'll get everything straightened out and get his life in order because he really is a good guy.
Did you see, Chris, the game of golf change when he was in his prime?
Yes.
With younger players? Because I think to back, he and I are the same age. Growing up, golf was not cool in school to play, but he made it cool. Did you see the same thing?
Yeah, he changed the dynamic of the whole game. So, again, there's a lot of little different pieces, in my opinion, on all that. You know, you go back to just 2000, you know, when all of a sudden he started playing the solid core ball. And, you know, what, again, I think a lot of people miss in all that is that, you know, as a guy who grew up playing a wound ball. Mm-hmm. The title, you know, Titleist made the best wound ball.
The Bellotta.
Yeah, I mean, it was the best ball made. But you could also hit it enough times it would get a little out of round. I mean, if anybody ever, you know, hit a thin shot with a wedge, you know, it would smile at you, right?
Yeah.
And there were plenty of times you would see some balls where the rubber band was almost, you know, coming out. You'd toss that one away. The solid core ball, in my opinion, was one of the biggest differences with his putting, because you hit a Titleist ball a few times, if it just got a tiny bit out of round, think about how that would oscillate on a putt. The solid core ball never did. And so he was making a lot of putts that a lot of guys weren't making, and I think that was one of the bigger things that really changed. And I think the best players in that era, Mickelson being one of them, Davis Love and some of those guys, that's when they went to Wally Uihlein and said, hey, we've got to have something that can compete with that solid core ball that Nike, what Bridgestone was making for Nike. And that's when the Pro V1 came out. They had to, and they probably brought it out quicker than they wanted to, but that was the impetus for all that happening. And he changed the game in that regard.
Do you think, Coach, that if he doesn't get injured in 08, that he eclipses Jack's record of majors?
Probably would. You know, even if it was just, you know, more majors at Augusta.
Yeah.
Because he knew how to play that golf course. You know, he might not do it again at the Open or the U.S. Open or the PGA, but there's something special about that guy. He just knew how to get it done. And, yeah, I wish the back would have held up a little bit better for him.
I think it would have been neat to see. I mean, because he was must-see TV. When he was playing in a tournament, you were watching.
Yeah.
It didn't have to be a major. You were watching.
And some of the things he did and pulled off were incredible. You know, some of the best shots he ever pulled off were not in the majors. It was like, remember the shot he hit at the Canadian Open when he's out of that bunker on that 18th hole?
Yes.
And he had to hit that shot over the water. And, I mean, it was just like, are you kidding me?
Yep.
Did he just really hit that shot?
Yep. And some in the World Golf Championships that he's hit,
yes,
in some of the match plays where,
yeah,
he's on his knees trying to hit a shot from,
yeah,
underneath the trees.
I remember the shot that he hit at Muirfield from behind. It was a chip shot that he hit, a flop shot that nobody else could keep it short of the hole.
He knocks it in.
He knocks it in the hole. I mean, it was like, so no, the guy did things with golf that were absolutely incredible, and that's why people love to tune in and watch him.
You came to the University of Georgia. Fall of 1996 is when you were hired, took over the Georgia golf program. What was your first responsibility? Do you remember?
Well, the team was already in place, so I didn't have to go out and recruit anybody for that year. I had a team that I was going to inherit. And luckily for me, I knew a lot of those guys because they had played in the AJGA. You know, Derek Jackson, Maury Beasley, Mark Northey. You know, Pete Abernathy was coming in as a freshman, and I knew these guys from my AJGA days. And it was a great group of guys. But as I got here, I kind of told that committee, because they said, hey, you let us know what you need. I said, well, give me a couple of years to see what we got to do. Well, it took about 3 months, and I said, we got to have a practice facility. I need to have a place we can call home. My first office was the press box of the baseball stadium. My second, and that was when the Olympics were in town. So,
okay, yeah.
So they were using the Coliseum for, I think, Olympic volleyball.
I think so.
So that's why I was in the baseball stadium. Then when the Olympics got over, I moved back into the Coliseum, and this was pre-cell phones. So every day I was driving back and forth to see if anybody was out practicing. I wanted to see what was going on. So I'd drive out here. Nobody would be out here. I'd go back to the office. So I thought, we need a home. So we built a practice facility. We finally got the university to say, okay, you guys raise the money, you do it. So we
made. So you went to Coach Dooley.
So I went to Coach Dooley, and he said, let's do it. David Boyd and Jimmy Gabrielson, Danny Yates, that crew all said, we'll raise the money. And they did. They raised the money. And he said, as long as you will include the women, we'll do half of it. And I said, well, why wouldn't we include the women? I naturally thought we'd include the women because, you know, again, all my AJJ days, it was a girls as well.
Right.
So I was all for that. So we decided we were going to do a building and again, a place where we could call home so my office could be here so that when they came out, I knew who was out here. And again, he asked me, he said, well, if we do that for you, can we include the women? I went, yes, absolutely. Yeah, I want the girls out here. So we built this building, and I remember we went to dinner with David Boyd. Coach Julie and I did, and David Boyd said, look, I know we've got a some more money we've got to raise for this, but I'm going to do the balance. And we, in turn, decided to name it the David Boyd Golf Center. So, you know, Coach Dooley was ecstatic with all that. And then all of a sudden here in my second year, we won the SEC championship. And in my third year, I'd gone out and had some guys that we'd brought in and won our first national championship up at Hazeltine. And that kind of validated everything I needed. So
yeah, you're an eight-time SEC champion, two-time national champion. What do you remember about that first national championship?
Well, it's interesting. So in the 2 years that we won the national championship, we did not win the SEC championship. So there was a 10-year period of those championships. And
what would you like more, national championship or SEC championship?
Well, the national championships were much more special.
Yeah.
Even though the SEC, I tell you what I learned real quick is the SEC championships are pretty
important.
Special too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the national championships, obviously, just because you're doing it against everybody. But we played at Hazeltine, which might have been the hardest golf course I'd ever seen in my life at that point. You know, the course record up there was 67, was Payne Stewart in the U.S. Open. It was playing so hard. We were the only school in the tournament that didn't have a score in the 80s. Because that's how hard it was playing. And so we set out in that fourth round. I think we started out the day four shots behind Oklahoma State. And within a couple of holes, we were a couple ahead. That's how, you know, I mean, you could make double bogeys and so forth there so fast. But I just remember that final round, Ryuji Yamada was paired with Charlie Howell and Luke Donald in the final group. And Mike Holder, the, you know, probably the greatest golf coach of my time, he walked with Charlie Howell that entire round. And he told me afterwards the 67 that Ryuji shot that day might have been the best round of golf he had ever seen.
Wow.
And so, again, for him to tie the course record and win us that championship was pretty special. And that was a bogey on the last hole. He played it safe. He didn't try, you know, he didn't try to do anything goofy.
Knew where he was, knew where the team was.
He knew where the team was and didn't want to do anything to mess it up. So he just played it smart and but had a chance to break the course record that day.
We'll talk about the second national championship that he and the Georgia Bulldogs won in 2005 in our next episode next week. Stay tuned. We'll wrap it up after this.
I'm Dr. Lowry Barnes. When it comes to orthopedic care, there's no place like the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. We built this hospital just for you. With state-of-the-art surgical suites, advanced technology, and the state's largest group of fellowship-trained orthopedic surgeons, it's the best place in Arkansas to get you moving again. And if you need urgent orthopedic care, UAMS OrthoNow is right here for you at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health, where motion lives and service leads.
The future is not about a bond reaching maturity. The future is what my grandfather worked for. It's what my father carried on. It's my responsibility today. The future is my son's tomorrow. At the Stevens Private Client Group, we believe that our strength builds success, not only for us, but for our clients. Stevens, member NYSE, SIPC.
That's all for this edition of From the Short Grass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Part 2 of my sit-down in Athens, Georgia with Chris Hack will come your way in our next episode. Remember, when you find your ball mark on the green, fix it and a couple of more. And I hope to see you sometime soon from the short grass.
You have been listening to From the Short Grass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf. This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network in association with Majestic Cubby Productions.